This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, October 19th, 2022. I'm Caleb Brown. For criticizing the Jones Act, should Cato Institute staffers be charged with treason? After some digging through the bowels of some federal government record keeping, Cato has uncovered some pretty troubling, even if laughable, claims about what ought to happen to think tankers that weigh in against the act. The Jones Act, of course, is a century-old law that raises prices, stymies efforts to ship goods across and among countries, and is, of course, highly protectionist. Cato's Colin Grabo and Scott Linsicum will be waiving their right to remain silent. Scott Linsicum, Colin Grabo, Caleb Brown, Julius Rosenberg. I would prefer it if we were not ever mentioned again in the same breath as Julius Rosenberg. But are you guys going to jail? Because I'm happy to disavow you if that's the case.
Well, I don't think I'm going to jail for this.
Important clarification. You know, thank you.
There's an infinite, as our friends at Crime A Day point out, there are so many crimes that, you know, that's potentially we could be in jail for all sorts of things. But it does appear that for the particular charge of treason based on our criticism of the Jones Act, I think we're okay.
So where did this come from, Colin? Where did this notion, this seems like, to put it mildly, this seems like a stretch goal for these guys to have past and current members, presumably that means staff, although donors might count as well, of the Cato Institute and Mercatus to be charged with treason. Where did this come from?
Well, of course, for years now, the Cato Institute has been steadily criticizing and illustrating the shortcomings of failures of the Jones Act. And this has made a lot of people very unhappy. Last year, the Cato Institute was provided with emails from the U.S. Maritime Administration through the FOIA process, Freedom of Information Act, that showed a lot of collusion and coordination between members of the U.S. maritime industry and the U.S. Maritime Administration. Well, this got us a bit curious about what else might be out there. And so, Cato, we started filing some FOIA requests of our own. And the U.S. Maritime Administration has not been exactly forthcoming with some of these. A lot of the materials that they provided to us had various items that were redacted. My colleague, Patrick Eddington, he felt that a lot of these were not justified. And so we challenged Merit on it. There was a lot of hesitation on their part. Finally, they were threatened with legal action. They finally decided to cough up the requested documents. And going through them last month, we discovered that members of the U.S. Maritime Transportation System National Advisory Committee, mouthful, comprised of which operates under the auspices of the U.S. Maritime Administration. These are members from the private sector. They put together a set of draft recommendations to turn around the fortunes of the U.S. Maritime industry. And they apparently thought it'd be a good idea to charge members, or fully justified to charge members of the Cato Institute, along with Mercatus, with treason, with the high crime of treason, a capital offense.
I might add, with respect to that, a stern warning to the Heritage Foundation for their criticism of the
right.
Jones Act. Treason for us, stern warning for them.
That's right. That, you know, criticism of the Jones Act is not something that is tolerated. I mean, this really is the crazy part of it, that just mere criticism, that just broaching the topic is deemed to be not permissible by some members of the U.S. maritime community, evidently.
Scott?
Yeah, and the other thing I would add is that this was just among the many bullet points in this the section of the minutes, right? So you have, you know, we need tariff relief for U.S. ships. We need increased cargo preferences and blah, blah, blah. And oh, by the way, treason charges for Cato and Mercatus, which, you know, does, of course, raise the question of why is this in there and what it, who said it and all this. And it's difficult, of course, to parse this out, if not impossible. But because it's buried in this bullet points, saying this is, just a funny joke is kind of difficult to believe, right? And then, of course, the fact that Marad so strenuously resisted delivering these documents also indicates that if it was a joke, they didn't really do anything to discipline the Joker, right? So regardless of the actual sincerity of the suggestion, it doesn't seem like anybody over there really cared that this was going on in these meetings. And they only did start caring once we started digging around for the information.
There are no bad ideas in brainstorming, Scott.
Well, and this is, what Colin and I wrote in yesterday's blog post, right, is that regardless of who said it, regardless of whether Marad actively considered any of these suggestions, look, this is a pretty troubling stuff, right? You have a individual associated with or participating in a government committee that advises the United States government maritime administration, openly suggesting treason for political speech, right? Core protected First Amendment political speech, the foundation of a free society, right? Beyond that, if you dig through the documents, and we provide a link to the entire cache of documents, 41 pages worth, so you can see. But if you dig through, you also see that this is the most salacious thing in there, but it isn't the only troubling thing, right? Here you have a U.S. administration, a U.S. agency, and the agents and the industry it supposedly regulates just openly colluding about how to resist Cato criticism, don't attend a Cato conference that we invited them to, and openly discussing how to support this law, right? So this is just public choice 101, industry regulatory capture, the agency and the industry colluding against potential critics. And it's all, again, so treason allegations aside, those are terrible, right? And certainly, like I said, salacious and sexy. But beyond that, it's just routine collusion and regulatory capture.
So while we're all here, let's engage in some of this frowned upon behavior.
I think it's a conspiracy, right? Let's get into it.
The Jones Act is a 100 plus year old law that severely, at least in our current context, severely restricts the movement of goods throughout states in the United States and across national borders. So what, give us a sec, Colin, if you don't mind, give me a sense of what's the scope of the imposition that the Jones Act creates.
So Caleb, you mentioned that the Jones Act greatly restricts domestic commerce, and you're absolutely right. In fact, the other day, a waiver was issued for the Jones Act that would allow a tanker to transport liquefied natural gas to Puerto Rico. This was necessary because it is currently impossible to move liquefied natural gas within the United States. We are the world's leading exporter of LNG, but we can't send it to New England. We can't send it to Puerto Rico because there are no ships to transport LNG that comply with the Jones Act. There are other, similar situations you find. Hawaii, for example, they cannot purchase propane from the U.S. mainland because, again, there are no ships to transport. Even we do have ships, they are very expensive to use, which discourages people from using them, forcing alternative methods of transportation like, trucks and rail, or they are in insufficient numbers. It's a very limited fleet that we're dealing with. So it hamstrings commerce within the United States. It impedes the ability of Americans to do business with other Americans. We live in a very geographically large country. It is a free trade zone, or should be one. And the Jones Act basically acts as a barrier to that domestic trade.
And this, I think, Colin digs into the absurdity of our treason allegations again, right? Supposedly, these are on national security grounds. This is a national security law, so you assume that's why we're so treasonous, because we criticize it. But the reality is that the Jones Act's been around for more than 100 years and has presided over the destruction of the U.S. maritime industry and the merchant marine, right? I mean, you're talking about an industry that is, it's so expensive to build ships here now that nobody buys those ships, nobody uses those ships, those LNG vessels and the rest. And so we actually, the law actually makes us weaker. In fact, one of my favorite examples is that we had to borrow foreign ships for sea lift operations during the first Iraq war. And even thought about asking the Soviets for help because our sea lift capabilities were so degraded. Again, thanks in large part to the Jones
and,
Act.
And you know, when we adopt for shipping, when Americans adopt second best alternatives for shipping, that creates yet further costs.
Right, right. You know, one of my favorite things that Cato did before my time here was put up a billboard on I-95 saying, you know, stuck in traffic, thank the Jones Act. Because, right, it's so expensive to move, say, oranges from Florida to Boston by ship that pushes that freight inland. So they use trains or trucks. So there are more trucks on the roads. There's less available capacity for things that can't move by ship. And that just inevitably makes our transportation system, our inland transportation system, weaker because we're not, you know, utilizing efficient transport via ships.
Well, just let me chime in on that for a minute. I mean, think about the United States, just geographically. We have thousands of miles of coastline. We have some of our most, you know, major important cities along our coast: New York, Boston, Miami, Baltimore, Philadelphia, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, according to federal data, in terms of ton miles, ships account for just 2% of freight being moved in the United States. That's incredible. Add in barges and you're at a total of 6%. Just given our geography, you'd think it'd be more than that. So we've taken what should be a major asset for the United States to move goods around the country, given our coastline, given all our major ports, and we've turned our back on it because we've made it prohibitively expensive to use these ships. In fact, Jones Act ships are basically used when there is no alternative. The vast majority of Jones Act ships are used to ship goods to the non-contiguous states and territories, Alaska, Hawaii, Guam, Puerto Rico, or they're used to transport petroleum products to those areas that lack pipeline connections. So, you know, they are a measure of last resort. Shipping in most parts of the world is an efficient means of moving goods, and we've made it, again, a measure of an act of desperation.
I want to go back to this, essentially, Scott, as you described it, it's just sort of open collusion. Well, it's not really open collusion. We had to threaten to sue in order to get the documents.
Right. Documented collusion.
And thank you to Pat Eddington, our sort of in-house FOIA ninja, for uncovering that information. But what's next? I mean, they're just going to say, we're going to have to do a better job. We're going to have to make sure that we don't get the treason allegation into the actual minutes of our meetings from now on. And then it seems like they'll just move on.
Right. It's like the old Wire clip, right? Where, you know, you don't actually document your conspiracy. You only talk about it orally, right? But look, more seriously, the fact is that this is, like I said, a classic example of what we libertarians warn about when you have pervasive economic regulation and industrial policy protectionism and the rest. You inevitably end up with an agency that is working hand in hand with the industry it regulates to simply maintain the subsidies or protectionism or whatever is there, regardless of the national interest. And so the reality is that, yes, this might push their collusion into a bit more secretive forms, but the incentives to operate in this way, the incentives to promote a law that is actually bad for the U.S. economy and bad for the vast majority of Americans will continue as long as the law exists, right? It's just inevitable that we're going to have this type of capture.
Colin Grabow and Scott Linscomb are scholars at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast on your podcast platform of choice, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.